What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Nothing much, Nick. Another day of NBA playoffs concluded, and a little bit surprised after today.
Yeah, we've had some good surprises, and tonight it was Philadelphia putting the beat down on Toronto, 116-95, taking a 2-1 lead in the series back in Philly. Impressive. You know, they just did a lot of good things in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I want to start with Toronto's perspective. Kawhi Leonard once again showed up. Kawhi Leonard is fantastic. Clearly the best player, I think, from both teams. Now, Joel Embiid had a case tonight because he was really dominant. But I've loved everything from Kawhi Leonard. Some bad turnovers late in the game because they started double-teaming him and giving him some more pressure. But really liked what I saw from Kawhi again. Siakam was solid. But from Philly, I mean, this is why they went all in on this starting five. It was a dominant performance from those five.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk Philly first. When you have that many talented players and they play well, you're probably not going to lose. You know, they're not all going to play well every night, but pretty much, you know, Joel Embiid dominant. Jimmy Butler was great tonight. Tobias Harris was okay. Ben Simmons was okay. J.J. Redick hit his shots. They've even had, like, solid contributions from James Ennis, Greg Monroe. So just a lot of positive. Everything kind of went right for Philly tonight. And on Toronto side, the only thing that really went right was Kawhi Leonard. You know, Siakam was pretty good. Danny Green hit some big shots. Other than that, you know, Marc Gasol, 7 points, 2 of 6. Kyle Lowry, 7 points, 2 of 10. Fred VanVleet, 1 point, 0 of 7. Like, there's just so many guys underperforming on Toronto. It's kind of scary for them going into game four.
Yeah, I mean, from Toronto's perspective on the issues, Marc Gasol needs to be more aggressive. I don't know why he doesn't take some of the open looks he gets. I get it. There's better offensive options. Like, I think you'd rather have Kawhi and Siakam and Danny Green taking shots. But Marc Gasol had plenty of looks tonight that he passed up that I think I'd rather have had him take.
He passes so many open threes, and it makes them just not respect him because they don't have to close out strong. So it just almost hurts their spacing. It's like he doesn't shoot threes.
Yeah, exactly. And then Kyle Lowry, this is what you get. It's 7 points, 2 of 10 shooting, and, you know, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. I mean, it wasn't like a terrible Kyle Lowry performance, but if he's not hitting shots and if he's not remaining aggressive, he's just such a non-factor. And again, like you said, it was really Kawhi Leonard. I thought Siakam was good. Obviously, Siakam had no turnovers in this game, which kind of sticks out when you look at his stat line. But those two guys need help. You know, Danny Green was nice from three, but he's not like a force offensively. He's the guy you dish out to for those open looks. It needs to be Kyle Lowry. And I thought Serge Ibaka was terrible tonight in his 16 minutes. As you mentioned, Fred VanVleet, a non-factor. The bench overall has been shaky for them. And if you're not going to have Kyle Lowry be effective, this team is in trouble.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry needs to average probably like around 17 points per game in the series for them to have a chance. They need him to be a scorer. They can't have him miss shots, especially when he's not aggressive and Gasol's not aggressive. Then you're relying on Danny Green to be your third scoring option. He's just a role player. Like, Kawhi and Siakam been great the entire series, great the entire playoffs. It's going to have to be Lowry or Gasol. Like, one of those two guys is going to have to score. And watching the game, it feels like they don't want to score. Same thing for our Fred VanVleet when he's out there too, when he played 20 minutes tonight. All three of those guys just feel like they don't want to shoot.
Yeah, there's a lot. Maybe it's a fear. I don't even know how to put it, but you're right. Those guys just don't want to be they don't want to have the burden of scoring buckets. They rather give it to Kawhi, who was effective tonight. But I also thought some of the turnovers Kawhi had, not even in the fourth quarter, just like it's almost like Kawhi Leonard has the ball in his hands a little bit too much at times. Like, he needs someone to play off of, and he doesn't necessarily have that right now.
It's like all of his offense is hard. Like, yeah, he's hitting tough shots. Like, he shot 59% from the field, and he hit a ton of tough shots. And, like, the turnovers, like you said, it's a lot of pressure from Philadelphia. It's like, if they're not going to step up, they're just going to keep keying in on Leonard and Siakam, and it's going to just make life really difficult. And we talked about it, like, Norman Powell's not going to save you. Pat McCall's not going to save you. I saw someone brought this up on Twitter. Do you think it hurt the bench so much for Toronto that they traded for Marc Gasol that they would have better off leaving the team?
No, I don't think that. I don't agree with that. I think Marc Gasol gives you a different value that they didn't have at the center position from a defensive perspective and for a playmaking perspective. I think what hurt the bench is the fact that OG Anunoby's hurt. Granted, that's just one player. His offense was streaky, but I think having his body out there for defensive purposes helps out this team more. I think OG is just the guy they're missing desperately.
Yeah, I think they miss OG, but I could see the argument for missing some of the offense of JV and then also DeLon Wright. I mean, Marc Gasol is obviously better than both those guys, and he gives you that center that you need. I think what makes it stick out more is the fact that Kyle Lowry hasn't been good, and he hasn't been the scorer they need him to be. You know, I know this season he's been a big playmaker, but in the playoffs, a lot of isolation ball, a lot of scoring you need done by your star player.
Definitely.
And on the other end, like we talked about, Philadelphia got that. You know, Jimmy Butler, 22 points, 9 of 15, 9 assists, 9 rebounds, really close to a triple-double. He was running the point guard show for a bit out there. You saw him kind of encouraging Joel Embiid. He was like, take us home. And Embiid was just dominant. In the second half, he had stretches where he was just pure dominance on offense and defense.
Yeah, I mean, the stretch between late in the third quarter and the early fourth quarter looked like Toronto was about to make this a really close game. They cut it down to, I think, 9. And then, of course, Embiid and company went on that run.
And Kawhi sat during that run, too.
That's a good, another good point as well. And also, it kind of felt like the momentum was switching because Ben Simmons got that dumbass tech for throwing the ball back at Siakam, which I get it. Like, you always block those shots. Like, you don't want those shots going in. But, like, that throw, like, to me, when that first happened, I was like, oh, this is the momentum. Like, this is where the pendulum swings and Toronto gets a hold of this thing. And obviously it didn't happen because Jimmy Butler was fantastic. One of the best Jimmy Butler games I've seen from an all-around perspective. Joel Embiid, like you said, what knee injury. He was absolutely dominant.
He threw out a windmill dunk. Like, his knee is fine now. I think he healed better than we expected, or he probably wasn't as banged up as, you know, they made it seem.
Or quarter zone shots or amazing, and let me get some. But, you know, he had 5 blocks too, and JJ was hitting threes. You know, Ben Simmons offensively was like, he didn't get a lot done, but he had 7 rebounds, 7 assists, which you like. And like you mentioned, the bench players, you know, James Ennis in 24 minutes, 10 points, 5 rebounds. That's more than you can ask for from him. Greg Monroe, the first 5 minutes when he first got in the first quarter, I thought were fantastic. You know, he had a couple buckets, a couple rebounds, a nice assist. And, you know, I had a tweet joking saying who thought Greg Monroe was going to be a factor in this, you know, because we haven't seen Boban. They've gone away from Boban to be more quicker with Monroe, and it's worked. And Mike Scott, in just 13 minutes battling plantar fasciitis, was solid too. It's just the fact that there was so much more production. And if Philly is going to shoot 43% from three, they're going to win a lot of games. The Raptors only shot 25%. Philly doesn't normally shoot and hit this many threes. When Embiid's 3 for 4, when Tobias has a couple, like, those are just issues for other opposing teams.
I wouldn't be surprised if I would bet Philly hasn't lost a game that shot over 40% for three in the playoffs, just because it just has such a big factor when some of the guys are just ice hot and cold on that team. You look at Toronto side, 7 of 27. That's just not going to cut it, especially when you have good shooters on your squad. So I think Philadelphia, and like, the fact is they blew them out. They got some rest for their guys. You know, Jimmy Butler only 35 minutes, Tobias 37, Joel Embiid 28, JJ 27, Ben Simmons 36. And, you know, they weren't necessarily playing, you know, balls to the wall in that fourth quarter because they were up so big. And you brought up a great point about that run. It almost felt like in game two, when Toronto made that comeback and they almost took game two, they had an opportunity to do that here, but Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid said nah.
Yeah. And like you said, the middle of that fourth quarter where it was just Embiid and Butler had some fantastic wired in timeout conversations, just, you know, telling Embiid, bring us home. Like, just keep shooting. Like, they ain't got shit on you, basically. Was fun to see. But like you said, Toronto definitely had an opportunity to win this game. I think maybe I understand, like, trying to rest Kawhi and giving Kawhi a break, because he did end up playing 36 minutes tonight, but you almost want to keep him out there when you have so much momentum.
Yeah, you almost have to play him 40 minutes in the series if Gasol and Lowry are going to be that bad and no one else is going to step up. I mean, in game four, they're going to need some major adjustments in terms of creating offense for other people and making Kawhi's life easier. You know, it's getting to the point where we saw Giannis in game one against Boston. Everything was super difficult. That's what Philadelphia is going to do to Kawhi in game four.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving on to game four, what are you expecting this series? Like, if I'm Toronto, I'm a little nervous because Philadelphia is a type of team that's just so emotional that one big blowout game can kind of get them going. We saw it in the Brooklyn series. It kind of just gave them some momentum.
Now, I actually, this was almost my thought and take of the day for the OTG Twitter. I almost said after our Sixers win tonight and they lose the next three, and I still feel that way. I still think the Raptors win this in six. I feel like tonight the three-point shooting is what stuck out more for the Philly, the fact that they were actually hitting threes. Yes, you make a great point. especially the first quarter, the Philly crowd was just on another level, and that just gave this team, I think, an added layer of juice to start this one. But it starts with who's going to help Kawhi. You know, if Kyle Lowry is going to play like this, then this is a completely different series. I think Siakam's going to be a solid guy. You're going to get 20 to 25 from him. But can Kyle Lowry step up? Can Ibaka step up? Can Marcus Gasol get aggressive? I still have the Raptors in six. But again, it starts with these guys hitting shots. I mean, the Raptors only turned the ball over 9 times. Philly had 13 turnovers. I know it's not a huge discrepancy, but I mean, the Raptors did just about everything right from their point of view. Obviously they lost rebounding, I think, pretty badly. But
45-35.
Yeah. The rebounding is an issue, but for really, I mean, if the Raptors are hitting their threes, this is a completely different game.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Three-point shooting has been a major factor in almost every playoff game in the entire 2019 postseason. So I'm really intrigued to see how Toronto bounces back. And I think an interesting point in this game is, obviously it's big for the playoff series, but some of the guys on Toronto that are going to be there next year, Nick Nurse, you're looking at this is a lot of pressure. You lose this game, you're probably losing the series, and Kawhi is probably leaving.
That's probably the biggest – I mean, that could be what causes them to lose this series. Not that I think that's actually going to happen, but like the dark cloud almost of impending doom. Like if we don't win, this is what happens if we lose. Like that extra added layer of stress and pressure on this team, because Kyle Lowry already doesn't like pressure. So if he knows he's playing in a pressure situation, not only to win a playoff game and series, but to also keep the best player on the team, it could have ripples behind the scenes.
It could. It's definitely something that's a major storyline, like we mentioned, we did the preview. Over to the other Eastern Conference series, Milwaukee-Boston. This one's been interesting. Blowout to blowout. You know, Boston played really well in game one. Milwaukee played really well in game two. So what's going to happen in game three in Boston?
I mean, first off, it's going to be who adjusts better between coaches. I think this is the one series where I'm looking at the coaching battle more than anything. How does Brad Stevens adjust? How does Coach Bud adjust? Because obviously in game one, Antetokounmpo was a non-factor, and the Bucks looked like they had no idea what they were doing. Fast forward to game two, they got Antetokounmpo involved. Middleton was electric.
Bledsoe superstar was Chris Middleton all of a sudden.
Yeah, Bledsoe was a lot more aggressive and a lot more efficient. And then you look at the other side, and Kyrie was neutralized. Granted, Kyrie was kind of just off. He missed some shots that he normally hits. And actually, Boston in general missed a lot of threes in game two that they normally hit, which, you know, could be a warning sign for the Bucks. But I know I picked Bucks in five, so I think the Bucks come out strong, and Antetokounmpo is limited. I think the biggest thing for this series is what star gets limited more, Kyrie Irving or Antetokounmpo?
At the end of the day,
those guys have to lead at home.
And the interesting with Kyrie in game two, like you mentioned, I think it was just some of him being off. Like, he missed shots that he made in game one. Is it going to be more of a medium in game three? And I still think there's more adjustments for Coach Bud to make for game three for Giannis to get more effective. Like, even though he had a pretty good game two, a lot of that was him just being resilient and kind of keep going inside and wanting it more than the other guy. There's still plenty of adjustments for both teams to make. I think game three and game four are going to be really big. And I'm hoping both series go seven. Like, they've both been really fun and had their moments.
Yeah, I think the one thing about Antetokounmpo, too, you made a good point. You know, that first half, he wasn't necessarily effective either. The first half, the defensive scheme by Boston was still really leading, was still affecting him. And then in that third quarter is when Antetokounmpo started to really break loose and get to the free throw line and everything else. But, you know, it wasn't that easy for the first half of that game.
And some of that, too, in the second half was, you know, Brook Lopez knocked down three, Middleton knocked down three. You mentioned Bledsoe being more aggressive. When guys are playing better, it just makes his life easier. So there's a lot of options on that team. It'll be interesting what happens with Malcolm Brogdon and Marcus Smart, who will both return at some point in the series. You know, it's not clear when they'll return or what the minutes restrictions will be, but two guys to really keep an eye on.
Yeah, I know Brogdon for sure is out for game three tomorrow. He's questionable for game four. And then obviously today, Marcus Smart was dunking in practice. So you got to think he's coming along nicely.
Now over to the series that has had plenty of drama, you know, from officials to bloody eyes, and that's Houston, Golden State, Warriors up 2-0. And it feels like Houston had an opportunity to win both these games and they just couldn't capitalize.
Yeah. You know, that late three by Chris Paul in game two looks like the, the deciding shot. You know, it's obviously, I hate saying like deciding shot or play, because like there's obviously so many moments in the game that contribute to why you lost. But that was like the nail in the coffin. And you know, the injury to James Harden's eye, Draymond Green got some dirty ass fingers, let me tell you, because everybody be getting some dirty bloodshot eyes when he gets that those fingers in you.
He didn't he just scratched him and gave him pink eye at the same time.
Yeah, gets his hands in his pants before the game. And then, of course, you know, that nasty Stephen Curry dislocation, which looked like his finger looked like a staircase. But, yeah, the Rockets had chances in both the games. They didn't get it done. Clint Capella, I thought, was better in game two than he was in game one. D'Antoni made that terrible, terrible decision to keep Nene out there, which led to Curry hitting that three late. It feels like now it's Warriors in five. I don't think the Rockets get back in this series. I think they win a game at home, but I feel like they really needed to take one of these two close games at home or on the road.
They needed Chris Paul and James Harden to be better. You know, they weren't going to win this series without those two guys being really good. And I don't think either guy has been really good. They both had moments and stretches, but if they're not going to be dominant, they're not going to have a chance. It's not, they have good role players on Houston, but not enough that you're going to beat Golden State. It's going to have to be your two stars playing at the highest level possible, and that just hasn't been the case, especially when you're facing a guy like KD who's just been on a tear. Then you got Clay, who was solid, and Steph's kind of been having his hot and cold moments. You mess in the dislocation. You got Draymond Green. There's just so many weapons on Golden State, and they're not even playing on 100% right now. So game three and game four, you have to be scared.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Kevin Durant hasn't even been overly efficient this series. You know, he shot only 40% from the field in game two, 44 and 33 in game one. Granted, he shot 50% from three in game two. And he also, in that fourth quarter, I mean, he's the reason why the Warriors won that game in that fourth quarter. He became automatic like usual. But like you mentioned, Draymond Green playing the best playoff basketball he's played since probably like, 2015, if I had to guess. Like, this is just a fantastic version we're seeing. He looks really quick out there, really healthy. And then Iggy off the bench. I've loved what Andre Iguodala has given them.
He looks juiced up. He's been catching a lot of oops.
Yeah. It looks like he, because I remember before the playoffs started, I think I said he took a step back. And it's like he heard. And he's like, nah, I'm still here. I'm good. But he's been really impressive. And I've really liked what Golden State has done so far in this series against Houston, because they pretty much dared the Rockets to have anyone beat them besides Harden. And they just don't have that kind of talent.
Yeah, pretty much spot on. It's going to be interesting to see if they can bounce back and just have a really good game three. And then maybe they could sneak game four. But you're right. I mean, it's hard to see this series going more than, you know, five or six.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, you know, it's more so like, I don't know if it's even like a hot thing. Like, Chris Paul just has to be like better, more aggressive. Like, I don't know how effective Chris Paul can be at the age of 33. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to expect from him in the playoffs. But for the amount of money he makes right now, which is $35 million a year, he's just not that much of a factor in this series, it feels like. Or even, I don't know, it feels like he's more of a role player now than the all-star next to James Harden, which he was last year, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, he needs to score more. They need him to be more aggressive from the start. They need him to put up points. They just need him to be more productive and kind of take on some of the load and kind of set up James Harden sometimes. It's just like, I don't know, it's just a combination of things on Houston. Just, they're not gelling right. It just doesn't look good. It's like the way they ended that Jazz series, even though they won, they didn't end it in like the prettiest of fashion. Some of it was Utah just not being great. So it's like it kind of set them in bad bloods, and you're facing Golden State, who we thought was going to kind of get up for it. They haven't necessarily got up to the level I thought they would, but they're still good enough because they're Golden State.
Yeah. And like we mentioned this before the series started, like Clint Capella, you know, if he's going to get neutralized the way he has, like, granted, he had 14 points on 71% shooting and
they
10
need 20
rebounds.
Points from him probably in like 14 rebounds.
Yeah, he's got, I mean, him or Chris Paul have to score over 20 points for them to win a game. Neither one of those guys have scored over 20 yet in this series.
And Eric Gordon's been aggressive. Like, they've at least gotten that from
him.
And the other guys just haven't been there. So it's like you have your one guy step up and then everybody else kind of fall down. And like, they needed James Harden to have a really big game. I know his eyes messed up, but they're going to need him to drop like 40 and just hit a ton of step back threes.
Yeah.
On to Portland and Denver, which is a series that feels like it should get more love. I didn't get to catch a ton of this series so far. I watched condensed of game one, and then I got to check second half of yesterday's game. So what are your thoughts on this in more of like a detailed fashion?
I mean, realistically, so far this series, because I've watched both games, and I live tweeted last night for OTG game two. I mean, it really is Jokic versus Damian Lillard in the sense that those are the two stars. Last night was a really rough game to watch because neither team was effective in shooting jump shots. Both teams forgot how to shoot. And that's like the one issue I can stay with Denver is Denver relies so heavily on the jump shot that when their jump shots aren't falling, that team is just extremely beatable. Like last night, they had 23 offensive rebounds, shot 20% from three, and only lost by seven. Now, granted, Portland didn't shoot well either, but from Denver's perspective, Will Barton hasn't been good. Jamal Murray is banged up. I don't know how much of the second half you watched, but he could barely move around in that second half. He's got a quad injury, which looks somewhat serious. I think he suffered it in round one against the Spurs in game six or seven. I know he went up for a dunk and caught somebody's knee. I think Aldridge's knee, like right in his quad, has been banged up ever since. So he hasn't been effective. Jokic is unguardable. You can attack him on defense all you want, but offensively, that there is not a better center passing-wise. Paul Millsap is underutilized. He's a complete mismatch for Denver to Portland. Portland can't do anything to stop Millsap or Jokic, realistically, on the offensive side of the ball, which is why they had 23 offensive rebounds. Granted, the guards were also getting involved in that. And then on the flip side for Portland, I mean, Lillard had his first really inefficient game in game two. McCollum was really aggressive but inefficient. But outside of those two guys, you're kind of like flipping coins on who you can get offense from. In game one, Harkless, Aminu, and Seth Curry didn't have – I think they had 1-3 combined between all three of them. They were better in game two. Harkless had suffered a really bad ankle sprain, so I'm not sure what his status will be for game three, but they desperately need him for the defense he provides. Canner's banged up. He gives you some spurts offensively and on the rebounding glass, but there's just more talent on Denver. And if Denver's going to hit jump shots, Portland's in trouble. But again, if they're not going to hit their jump shots, it gives Portland a chance to win games like they did last night in game two.
Yeah, I really like the comparison of it's kind of like flipping a coin other than Dame and CJ for Portland. Like there's so many guys going into the game where you really don't know what to expect. Rodney Hood had 15 points. Is he going to be good all the time? It's like, are these guys going to be efficient? Are they going to knock down shots, whatever it may be? And you brought up a great point as well with the rebounding. It was just like at a point in that game, Denver was actually probably playing better. They just weren't making their shots to complete the comeback. So if I'm them, I feel pretty confident for the rest of the series that I'm going to come away because, like you brought up as well, their talent is kind of across the board instead of split up into mostly two or three guys.
Yeah, I mean, this was my thought of the day for the OTG Twitter. I think Portland got extremely lucky last night. I thought Denver was the better team. In that first half, I did keep track of it. Give me 1 second. Let me flip my notebooks. I know – all right, out of 15 threes – Denver shot 11 wide open in the first half. I'm not sure what mark this was, but I had this written down because I was just flabbergasted for the fact of how many missed threes they had that were wide open. And you can't expect a team like Denver, who we know is a high-paced, fast-paced offense, shoots a lot of jump shots, to go that bad. Granted, it happened to the Houston Rockets last year when they missed 27 straight threes. But, like, that's an outlier, and I agree with you. Yesterday, I felt Denver was the better team. They wanted it more. They were more aggressive, but they just weren't getting shots to fall, and it worked out in Portland's favor.
Yeah, and it's probably going to change if they keep playing that way. Things are going to go well. Maybe attack a little bit more. You don't need to take quite as many threes, especially with Portland's lack of rim protection. No one's scared of Enes Kanter. So, you know, keep going inside and maybe adjust a little bit there. But I would feel pretty good about Denver being tied 1-1 in this series.
Definitely. Like I said, I think the only concern I have from Denver is Jamal Murray's health. I think he needs to be healthy. He's got to be better than he has been in game one and two. Of course, that's the injury status, though, because you haven't gotten a lot from
Morris hasn't really
Monte been. Morris.
Yeah, he had a rough game, and he had some really dumb fouls. I mean, if Jamal Murray's really injured, maybe we see some Isaiah Thomas, but you never know. Any other thoughts on any of the playoff series, Corey?
Nothing out of the ordinary has popped up for me between all four of these series.
Yeah. I mean, The only thing I would say is the blowouts, maybe for like some of them, it's been a little interesting. But for the most part, Houston, Golden State, you could feel like they hate each other. Denver and Portland's been fun on both sides of the ball. And then you have like the Kawhi Leonard and Joel Embiid in Philadelphia and Toronto. So just a lot of fun stuff. And hopefully all these series last at least 6 or 7 games, because there's some really good matchups and some good basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure Denver, Portland, and Philly, Toronto go at least 6 each. I'm not sold yet on – I can't go back on my Bucks take yet. I mean, I do hope it goes long, because I do enjoy those two teams and how they match up. But, yeah, it feels like we're going to have some deep playoff series this round.
And that wraps it up. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening. Check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.